Welcome to Star for the Universe On Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I run SCP Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just a reminder how to join us. We have a talk guest every Thursday night starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either call on the phone, just dial 605-562-0444. The call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the Talk Show website at www.talkshow.com. And search for call ID 17702. Also, if you want to, you can join me on Twitch. The channel is SFU On Call. That's SFUONCALL. So just go to twitch.tv/SFU On Call, and you will find us there. And you can participate in the chat room there. I co-stream on both of those. Lovely. And of course, this podcast is available on YouTube. And also, it's a podcast, so it gets placed on various other feeds, iTunes and various other feeds around the net. Just a quick reminder also that if you want to contact me, you can send me an email. That'd be great. My email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. That's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, if you want to follow me on Twitter, again, my podcast account there is sfuoncall. And of course, I have a personal account, which I rarely post. But if you want to follow me, hey, feel free. But just a reminder, I am really proud of being Catholic and O's fan, and I love tech. So if you don't like any of those, then you probably don't want to follow me. But if you don't mind a little bit of any of those, then follow me, because most of my posts are responses to other people's posts. So it's not one of those. If you're going to follow me on Twitter, it's not going to be one of those Twitter feeds, Twitter accounts that you're going to see constant stream of tweets. Lord knows I don't know what to do. I'm not really good at social media when it comes to posting stuff. But anyway, moving onward and forward, the quick news from ADB this week, they have the Carnivons, minis are coming to Shapeways very, very soon. I'm assuming I saw the announcement on Facebook. That means I'm assuming that it'll be coming up this upcoming month. And of course, also for those of you who already bought the e-book version of the GURPS Klingon, there was an update sent out last week. So you probably should have gotten an email saying, hey, there's an update available. But also for those of you who currently haven't bought it, there is an update available. So if you want to buy the latest and greatest update, you know, of GURPS Klingon, it's available now. So go to your e-tailers, you know, Warehouse 23, Drive-Through RPG, or War Game Vault. All three of them have it available. And of course, if you want to, you can go to ADB's online store, and you can buy the hard copy if you want to go there. When it comes to the SFB Online client, I'm actually not much news there. I have done the work, which I had posted about last week, but that will be definitely something I will be working on this weekend. Hopefully I can get that done. I'm thinking about tomorrow night, actually. What I'm thinking about is, because it takes me like 4 hours to get it all done and posted up, and just takes a lot of work to get a release out, because I have to make it a release. I have to make 4 or 5 installers available, and sometimes I have to go to different operating systems just to do it. Like to create the Windows installer, I actually have to bring up a Windows VM, create the installer under Windows, then switch back to my Mac, create the installer for, you know, the application under Mac, and make sure that it's notarized and all that kind of thing and all that. So it takes quite a bit of time to do all of that after I've created the latest and the greatest versions available. The Star Sapphire tournament has been going on. Already got a couple games done, and hopefully we'll see more of that done more quickly. When it comes to the library, nothing much happening there. Unfortunately, it's been very, very quiet in all regards. So with that, that is the news for this week. And it's me, yes, the one and only Paul Friends, welcoming you to Star Wars the Universe On Call. And tonight, well, this is going to be me. Barry's not going to be here tonight. I apologize for starting off with a really bad mic. The mic all the way over there, and now the mic is right next to me. Crap. Pardon me as I fix my mic. Okay. This is a little better. Sorry, I apologize for such an awkward start. But in any case, given all that wonderful view time, now what we're going to be doing today is, well, actually, the topic for this evening is something which I am kind of interested. Well, I wouldn't have the topic on if I wasn't interested in it. But when it comes to the online client or any, you know, playing of SFB, FedCom, all that, what one of the requests I've seen again and again, over and over, is they want an AI opponent. Now, I'm sorry, I get frustrated because of people overall, those that are not developers, they think, oh yeah, it should be easy to do, you know. It is not easy to do. Let's put it simply out there. That to create an AI opponent for SFB, Starfleet Battles, is not an easy thing to do. Now, given that, if you scale back from that place where you want SFB, you want an opponent, you can actually make it possible. Because I'm going to show you something real quick. For those who are actually watching the video and those who are not watching the video, I don't think this is that big of a deal. And I think you should be fine. Okay. Right here. That is the robot rules for Federation Commander that is downloadable from the ADB's website, starfleetgames.com. They actually have it. I'm not sure where it is at the moment. It's been a while because at one point, now this is, let's tell you how old these rules are. These rules, copyright on the bottom of it, 2006 and 2007. So to say the very least, it is a little dated. But at the same time, at 2006, originally had the robot rules written, and then this is 4 pages of rules. 4 pages worth. And this is just for FedCom. This is a FedCom robot player. Now, this is incomplete as it stands because update 6-6 states provision needs to be made to decelerate to keep enemy in arc. So after it, the way this looks like is that it's color-coded based on update. I think that's the way they did it. So, but there's at least 6 updates to the rules. And I remember this set of robot rules. I remember this. And that is that when the person and Steve Cole were working on the robot rules, because there was Steve Cole, and I forget who the other person was off the top of my head. And that is that they were doing iterations and they were trying to figure out a way of creating decent robot rules. Now, decent robot rules are a great basis for creating an AI, quote unquote, opponent. At least a computer opponent. AI, sorry, let's back up. Forget AI. AI is a marketing term at this point. The whole idea of artificial intelligence is a marketing term. The closest thing that you can, that currently exists is what's called machine learning. And that is that given a specific domain, a specific problem, you can actually, through different mechanisms, you can teach the computer to play a game. Now, SFB, I don't think is one of those ones you can, because here's the problem. You need to be able to program the rules of the game into the computer so that the computer can learn how to better play the game. That's machine learning. Or possibly if you want to call it limited AI. You want to call it that, that's fine. General AIs, don't worry about that, folks. If you're worried about that, we're going to be all going to be taken over by a big AI, you know, Skynet is going to take over and we're going to be killed, you know, and the robots are going to take over. I don't think so. Now, what was it? Two Faces of Tomorrow. That's it. Okay. Well, one of my favorite sci-fi novels. Many years ago, it was Two Faces of Tomorrow. The weird part is that I actually bought a copy many years ago. Now, after I bought my first initial copy when I was in college, and they changed. The one thing that I always remembered about that book was the cover. The cover is basically a habitat in space. You know, one of the ones that was back in the 80s. And that, my guess is that they still would think about this because it's cheap and it's doable, which is the whole idea is you got a habitat ring. And the habitat ring just goes around and around and around, basically creating artificial gravity via centrifugal force. Now, given that was the picture of the satellite that they had. And the whole idea of that satellite was to improve the AI, teach the AI, create an AI, because of the computers have gotten too smart. But they, well, let's put it this way. They were smart but dumb. The incident that starts this whole novel off is that they're telling the computer, you know, giving the computer these different readings and so forth, because what they want to do is they're on the moon and they want to get rid of basically this ridge in the moon. They want to get a hole because they want to create a launcher for moon rocks. You know, they're doing mining is what they're doing. They want to mine it and produce it on the moon, and then they were going to have a railgun and send it to Earth and do it that way. And just have it so it just kind of, you know, goes around the orbit. You have an orbiting platform that grabs it and then, you know, and then provides, you know, ability to get it so it gets into Earth, you know, onto Earth or around the Earth orbit if they have factories. I forget if they had factories in orbit. I don't think they did. But the whole idea was, you know, but the thing is, the computer got really realized that, oh, all we need to do is to take, you know, because currently they had the technology to take these ore rocks and blast the moon. Well, the computer got smart and went, hey, if this is what you're trying to do, I'm just going to go boom, boom, boom. And then the computer, then the astronaut, well, the person doing the work on the moon, looks at his computer screen and goes, you know, basically task complete. And then because there was this, you know, obviously he wasn't expecting this, and it blew it did exactly what they wanted to happen, but the computer didn't know that that you needed to tell someone that you're going to be doing that, you know, safety on all that kind of thing. Didn't, and there was no thinking involved, and that was their issue. That's why they put an intelligence on the satellite. The whole idea was to teach the computer, teach the AI to be more human, to actually think. So it's a real neat novel. Two Faces of Tomorrow. It's a neat one. And that's one that's always left an impression on me, obviously, about, you know, AIs and where it could go. And I think what it was teaching, I think it's very true. Maybe it's just because I read it, but it's basically the basics of what we do now, is that for machine learning, what we do normally is we say, here's a bunch of rules, and then let the computers figure it out. It's like a child. The child, you know, one thing a child does, obviously, we, as parents, we teach the child certain things. And obviously, when it comes to social norms, and in that case, we teach that to the child. But things about, you know, the world, like, oh, if I have a ball in my hand and I drop it, you know, I let go, it falls to the ground. That's experiential learning that the child is doing. So, oh, hey, Dave. Dave's. And actually, why don't I do this? Let's just change it here a little bit so you guys can actually see Dave through those people. And if Dave wants to speak out a little more, he can, and you actually can see what he says. But anyway, given that, I might switch back and because he's kind of quiet at the moment. But anyway, given that, you know, that's how machine learning and AIs work today, or limited AIs work today, domain-specific AIs, whatever you want to call it. To me, AI at this point is a marketing term. It's purely, it gives you a feeling that the computer is smart. Computers aren't smart. They can learn. You know, as I said, you know, the whole idea of machine learning and those algorithms that help, that you can do, and I said there's different ways of doing that. Now, when it comes to SFB, FedCom, and more importantly, SFB Cadet version, you know, those have, you can use a robot. In theory, you can use a robot player. Now, the thing is, as I showed earlier, this thing, it says robot rules for the Federation Commander. It's 4 pages long. That's just for Federation Commander. Now, compare that to this. Let me just do this. This starts here, goes up here, goes all the way down here. That, my friend, is all the rules for a robot player for the cadet training manual. Now, the cadet robot opponent is very, very dumb. Let me just give you some quick rules. Actually, because believe it or not, that little part, so it's only half the page, because the little portion at the bottom of the first half, the first column of the two columns is just an introduction, which says, Starfleet Battles was designed and intended as a two-player game. The Cadet Training Manual includes some scenarios that require only one player. You have just played three of them, because actually this starts with, has three first scenarios, which is completely done by the player, by a single player. Now, you just play them. The other is number 11, But you haven't got to that part yet. Now, in the captain's edition, there are snares for one, two, three, and more players, although most are intended for two players. To get most out of Starfleet battles, you need to find one or more regular opponents. For those times you do not have an opponent available, or simply don't feel like the company, we have provided a quote-unquote robot opponent. He isn't very smart, but he's always available. Anyway, who would want to be beaten by a robot? The robot player is used in scenario number 4. So, it's half a page, and for the most part, as it's pointed out, it's a really dumb opponent. But when you need someone, or need a computer opponent, something to play against, doesn't have to be that good, at least to start off with, doesn't have to be good. And the thing is, these rules, which are pretty simple. For example, let me read through just a few of them. I'm not going to go through the whole thing because otherwise we're going to be spending like 20 minutes just reading through the rules, which I think is kind of ridiculous. Number one, the robot ship moves at speed 12 every turn. That's number one. That's the first part of it. And then the second thing is the robot ship will try to fire every weapon every turn. Nice and simple. The robot ship will obey the rule prohibiting the fire of single given weapon on twice two consecutive turns within a quarter turn. Four impulses on a 16 impulse system. And that's what this is using. This is using a 16 impulse system at this point. Not 32, 16. So speed 12 is like speed 24 in a 32 impulse system. Number two is the robot ship will follow your ship as a seeking weapon. So it's like a drone that's going after your ship until the first impulse of the turn in which the robot ship is within 4 hexes of your ship. At that point, the robot ship will fire every weapon that will bear. Basically, it'll do an alpha strike. That's what it's called, to fire every single weapon available on the ship. It's an alpha strike. Which, if you guys were, let me see, was it last? No, it wasn't last week. It was the week before. I think it was late. See, last week, a week before, I can't remember off the top of my head. But basically, we went through, and one of the things that currently is available in the online client, I think it's 2 weeks ago, online client, is that it does have the ability to calculate what weapons are in what weapons can fire what ship. So if you say, okay, here's my ship. These are the weapons I want to select. This is my target. Fire, you know, to do an alpha strike, and it will calculate it out. So the technology exists in the client to calculate whether a weapon can fire or not. In theory, the one thing the reason why the one thing it does not do, and I think people can forgive me for this, which is it doesn't work with those special arcs. For example, the Klingon boom phasers. You know those forward extended phasers? They have a special arc that directly behind the ship, those forward extended phasers can fire directly back, which is weird, but it's one of those rules. You know, for like a D7, I forget which ships on the Klingons that actually is supported, but it's a special firing arc, and that's actually not supported by the client. The client doesn't understand that. You know, in theory, I could for directly behind. In theory, I could add it, but you know, that's step 5 or 6 down the road. So the idea is, you know, does an alpha strike at range 4? Now, if I'm looking down at the rules, and basically, if it gets near the end of the turn, okay. I was going, that's considered the primary firing point of when you get to range 4. At that point, we'll fire every weapon in the cave based on alpha strike. This is known as the primary firing point, and it will theoretically happen once every turn. Theoretically. So if you as a player stay out of range 4, the ship won't fire at you at this point. if you don't, I'm just reading through here and just getting an idea of if you don't get a range 4, what happens? Okay. Okay, no. It doesn't say. My guess is that the robot player, it doesn't say here, but I'm assuming that the robot player won't fire if you don't get to range 4. Now, given that it's flat out can move speed 24. Now, my question about these rules is that at the moment I'm guessing that the robot player is violating the rules. That is, you give it a ship, and it doesn't matter power. Power is inconsequential. As I said, it's a robot player. It's dumb. So it might be actually a little more powerful than normally, because of, you know, it's always going speed 12, period. I said at the end of the turn, all weapons the robot players are reloaded. Now, if the Federation ship is used as a robot ship, it will fire one and only one photon torpedo each turn, since they require two turns to arm. And if it's a Romulan KR, series number 6, uses a robot ship, it will launch torpedo A on the first impulse that the target is acceptable arc of the first, fourth, seventh turns. This is the funny part. After you complete the first 6 scenarios and leave the cadet ships, the robot ship rules can be adopted for those standard ships. For example, the Federation heavy cruiser has 4 photon torpedoes, so 2 would fire every turn. So the idea is that you would fire half your photons every single turn. So you're always, it's kind of like the whole supposition behind photon torpedoes versus disruptors. That is that disruptors can fire every turn, so you fire them every turn. A photon can fire every other turn, so the amount of damage caused by a photon torpedo versus a disruptor is basically, it's the same. To a certain degree. Because disruptors at range 0 or 1 are 10 points versus 8. But for the most part, you know, they're very similar when it comes to the amount of damage that you can do over 2 turns. Now, the obvious situation with disruptors is that you have to get on the same shield, while, as my friend John DeWeese would say, the kadunge factor, where the photons, they actually do, like, they'll do 16 points of damage in 1 turn versus 8 point damage over 2 turns. And those 2 turns, you got to make sure you hit the same shield twice to do the same amount of damage that the photon torpedo does. But then you have, as I said, the Kadunj factor, the shock, basically, is what it boils down to. So, well, you know, so the Roma players, are doable. The tough part when it comes to the client is that how do you implement them? That is the critical question. For the cadet, what I was originally thinking for the cadet version of the client is something more along the lines of learning because of the robot ship always moves last, period. Doesn't matter what your speed is. The robot ship, in my mind, always moves last. Because if you actually go back to SAP rules, there is a rule when it comes to, actually, just an optional rule, which is, I forget the rule off the top of my head, which is computer run ships is basically what it is. I forget the exact name of the rule, but basically it's an optional rule. And part of that rule is that since it's computer-based, there's a lot of things it gets to do that you can't do. In some cases, one of the rules, if I recall correctly, is that the computer can actually look at, anyone running a computer-based ship can look at your EA after you're done. So it can peek to see what is your plan for the turn. It's like, yikes. But another one, which is more apropos in this case, in my mind, is that computer-based ships always move last. They always, no matter their speed, they always had the edge. They always had initiative, no matter what. It's like how, you know, shuttles and fighters, even though they might be slower, they're more agile and at least that's the reason, the quote reason for it, and that is that because they are so small, they're more agile. They can react to the movement of the ships because ships are much less agile. And in the case of computers are ultimate when it comes to being agility, i.e. be able to react. It's because they'll be able to react a heck of a lot faster than any human can react. And therefore, they move last. Always. So, that is where, in my mind, it comes into play. Now, for the cadet version, the way I see it working is this. Unlike the FedCom version, that's good. That'd be a little different because of the biggest issue with the FedCom is that you actually have multiple ships, and for robot players, to play with a robot player, you might have to have a requirement that it's single ship to use a robot player, which is in theory it could be done. Now, a single robot player ship versus a collection of ships, I'm not sure how well it would do. I'd have to look at the rules because of, in that case, then you have to do you have to add a little more smarts about how it moves because you might just say, okay, always look for the biggest target or what you consider the most, the dangerous target. You know, and always fire on that. Now, of course, there becomes an issue. Most of the time, see, the funny thing is, if you ever watched Fleet Battles, you will notice that most people in fleet battles, they don't target the big ships. They target the small ships because they can fire the small ship. The small ship goes poof, you know, explodes. Actually goes go boom. Poof. In space, they don't hear you explode. If you hear explode, you're too close. You're in the ship. But anyway, so, you know, and the idea is to get rid of that ship so you can actually move up the chain. Now, obviously, if you have enough firepower and close enough to knock out a larger ship, you want to do that because of he will actually be the biggest threat. But, you know, most of the time, you want to hit the ship you can kill. That's usually the rule, at least in my mind. That's the way I've usually seen fleet battles played. Now, get back to the cadet version. The cadet version, the way I see it working, is that since the cadet version, you have a single ship. The way I see it working is that you move, and as soon as you're done moving, it automatically moves. And if you move on to the next impulse, and you don't move, it'll move automatically. Actually, I have to double check because I don't know when high energy turns are introduced. If they're introduced in the cadet version, cadet training manual or not, and if they are, when. And even then, I'm not sure if it introduced the whole idea of initiative. You know, faster ship always goes last. Speed is speed. And the reason why I point out HETs is that HETs are the only glitch in movement. Because in theory, even if your ship cannot move an impulse, a single hex forward, you do not move that impulse, you can still move. You can still change facing if you're heading the ship, which means that when it comes to the your sequence of play, so that, you know, you would actually go first, you'd have to do your HET before the computer moved. But, you know, in the cadet version, I guess that really wouldn't matter all that much because of in the cadet version, what you're doing. The robot player is there for one thing and one thing only, and that is to help you to learn to play the game. Will it be a really effective opponent? No. Could it ramp up to be a better opponent when it comes to the cadet? Yeah. It can be added. You know, it can be improved. It brings me back to an idea I had when it comes to Starfleet battles and overall the client this is so long ago now. And that's because of there was this game called Omega. Omega is something that I really liked. I liked the idea. And I don't think anyone does this anymore. Which is the whole idea of Omega was that you have these tanks, and the tanks were computerized. And what you were doing, you were building an AI that ran within the tank to defeat your opponent. And it goes back, I'm sure you guys, unless you're old enough and you've actually have been in been really looking at computers for a long time. You may have never heard of this game. It was called Core Wars. Core Wars is the whole idea is that you had self-replicating code that ran in a computer. And the idea is that programs would face off. You know, you basically, you would try to kill your opponent, disrupt its execution, and get it so that basically that it would die before you got killed. So Core Wars is actually it's kind of a neat idea. You know, it's pretty basic. I'm not sure if anyone plays Core Wars anymore. But the great thing about Omega was the idea that you actually was that you programmed your AI, your computer-based tank. And long ago, I had the idea of actually doing the same thing with the client. So you could actually program the client and have it so that you actually could have basically a computer, a game based off of developing an AI for a ship, and then the ships would play against each other. You know, I never really did much work on that. Maybe one of these days I might get back to it. You never know. I like the idea. I just don't see anyone actually being interested these days of actually playing that kind of a game. You know, because how many people actually want to learn? In this case, probably a different programming language. Though the one I did look at, where is it? I got up there. I got all my programming books behind the camera. And I wanted to point it out, possibly can grab it. Oh, there it is, right over there. It's called, the book's called Programming in Lua. Lua is a very lightweight programming language, which anyone who's a hacker and does anything with Nmap knows about Lua, because Lua is the scripting language for Nmap. So you can do all kinds of cool things with the Nmap utility. And I forget what else. I thought there was some other game that used Lua for some of the stuff it did. I forget at this point. I can probably do a search for it. Actually, give me a sec here. I'm gonna see if. I'm going to do a real quick search. I'm probably doing a really awful search. Okay. Wow. I'm looking at some of the among. Okay, there's popular websites using Lua, such as Hente Hub, which is, that's weird. Because Hente Hub, isn't that like anime or something like that? There's a bunch on there. Okay, you got like Autodesk Stingray, a game engine which uses Lua for developing video games. So you can use Lua for developing video games. Flame is another use for Lua, which is called Flame, a large, highly sophisticated piece of malware used by cyber espionage. Okay, let's not use that example. That's a bad example. I'm just looking at different examples. Let me just do a find for game. Game. Okay, of course, I already said the Stingray. Another one, Coco's DT2D, which is that. Okay. Folded, a science-oriented game in protein development, uses Lua for user scripts. Interesting. So it looks like there's engines that use Lua. Right. No. Okay, I think, yep, that's about it. Doesn't looks like there's only one of them that actually uses it for user scripts when it comes to games, but obviously, I'm sure there's other ones, but there's for different things, like this program called this video game platform called Core. It's a good game platform, and it uses Lua for working on it. But for Lua is available for many scripts. But even if I would use Lua as the programming language, which I'm not sure if it could, it's possible. But anyway, I'm not sure. The question is, how many people actually would be interested in programming a computer-based AI for playing SFB? That was the one thing that got me. That still, I'm not as intrigued about it as I was in the past. In the past, I was really intrigued about that idea. The idea being that I would create, I'd put in in the client itself, I'd add all the hooks that would be needed to have it so that an AI could be developed. Or, sorry, back up. Not an AI, but, well, an AI could be developed. A computer-controlled ship. So the idea being is that you would be able to have a computer player, which then you can develop yourself. And the whole idea was, when it comes to the latter, which is the first idea, as I mentioned before, was the ability to actually have it so there was a computer versus computer. The second idea was to have it so that you actually could do a computer. You could I could write up I could put it add in the hooks. So you could actually call in, at the certain points, so you actually could find out, okay, what's the range between my ship and the other ship? What shield is it off of? Things like this, which would I was thinking about would be necessary to add support for that, for you to do that. Now, the great thing about that is that if I could have it so that I have the hooks, I wrote a beginning program. One thing I could, in theory, do is I could kind of open source the program, make it available to everybody, possibly even make it so that people can upload their own AI opponents. And as a community, we could build up on that. Now, the tough part, as I said, would be that the big question in my mind would be, would anybody be interested in that? I think most people would not be interested. Only true, this is geeks of geeks. It's what we're talking about here. We're talking about that, okay, currently, in my mind, a lot of SFB players, Starfleet Battles players, are geeks. They are engineers at heart. Whether they're actually truly engineers or not, it doesn't matter. They're engineers at heart. They love the math. They love how, in my mind, one thing that I always loved about SFB is how, quote unquote, realistic everything was. It took into consideration all these different factors and made it feel real. All the rules that are put in place made it feel real, So the big question at that point is, when it comes to having so you actually programmed it yourself, I said that's geeks of geeks. So you have engineers, but then you have software engineers. You got people who actually know how to do some kind of development. They don't have to do amazing coding. You might be a person who does Visual Basic, does simple macros in Excel, or does something as crazy as writing their own programs to get certain things done during the day. Even go as far as writing their own little batch scripts, you know, in Windows or bash scripts on their Macs, you know, things like that, where, you know, simple little things that they can do to automate what they do. Or even, if this and that stuff, you know, where programming things, even if it's graphical, you know, again, those are almost the geeks of the geeks, where people, you know, start thinking about how to automate some certain of these processes and what needs to be done to get that to happen. In some cases, it requires a little bit of coding, or at the very least, a way of thinking about the different pieces that have to go together. I'm sorry, when you get to that point, you're programming, because that's partly of what developing a product is that you're piecing things together. This can do this, this can do this, this can do this. It just depends upon the detail. For example, you know, in the case of BASIC, okay, I need to move a ship from here to here. You know, what do I have to do? How far down do I have to go? In that case, you know, I might have to skate what's the angle and so forth. I have to go down to the really nitty-gritty parts versus, you know, I need to move a piece of data from here to here. How do I get there? Well, there's multiple ways of doing it. You can write it to a file, have it that the other program reads it from a file. You know, can you use some automated language to pass, you know, read it from the file over here and then use it like an API that's available for this program here and calling into that API? You know, it depends on the complexity. And as I said, you know, some people, even if it's just something as simple as using if then then that, you know, or in the Yahoo pipes back in the day, I'm not sure if this then that is still available. I forget if there's any other one, you know, little web-based thing that you can do for connecting services together. I mean, that's simplistic for people. It doesn't require you actually to write code, you know, get out the Java compiler and go. But anyway, moving back to what I was talking about, which is that even though I think that not going that far is really being a geek of the geek, I was going to say nth degree, but I think that is going a little bit far in saying it's to the nth degree. But the key here is that it is possible to do robot players and actually have it so it's integrated into the client. And, you know, obviously, if I was to do one, I'd do the Cadet. Now, the Cadet version would be pretty simple. You as a player would move the ship, or in the case of the Impulse where you didn't move and the client goes, hey, he doesn't move. So tell the robot player to move his ship if that ship moves, you know, especially if neither ship moves, but keep moving, because nothing's changed. But anyhow, so, you know, the robot player, that's how the Cadet one would work. Now, the robot player for Fed Commander, that one is a little more difficult, because here's the gotcha, my dear friends. In theory, you could do that for a FedCom player, you know, an automated player, so that it would. Actually, you couldn't, because here's the difficult part. Here's always the difficult part. about robot players and having automated players. And that's the interface with the person. Because of in FedCom, you have to go through the different steps, the different segments. And movement, that's relatively simple. That's not the big deal. The big deal is launching and firing. Unless we have it so the robot player really violates the whole idea of the segments, the impulse segments within the FedCom rules. If we say we don't care, we say, okay, actually, I'm sure a player actually would care. Here's the reason why I say that. And that is that if, let's say that if you're really close to the robot ship, and that robot ship at that point decides to launch a drone. When it comes to the impulse segment, the drone launch, or even plasma launch, either one, seeking weapon launch, is before fire. So if you want to have the ability to fire at it before it even gets close, or, and Lord knows, if we're talking about range zero, which I feel pretty confident that the FedCom allows you to do that. If I recall correctly, FedCom, all it does is it limits you to the number of ships that you can have in a single hex at the same time without penalty. I think that if I recall correctly, that is the rules. I'd have to double check because it's been a while since I looked into the rules when it comes to ships in hex. Now, that produces a problem because that means what that would require is that the player to go next impulse, next segment, and so forth, which they have to do anyway. Now, okay, in theory, you can do that. The only thing you'd have to make sure that you did was that the computer is always going to go last, so that if you say, okay, next, and it says, okay, launch seeking weapons, it will launch, when you click next in segment, it could then launch seeking weapons. So you're going on to the next impulse, but the computer can still react to anything you did from the previous segment. Oh, sorry, going to the next segment. The computer can react to the previous segment. That's the only way it actually would work. So that would work. The tough part would be, well, again, if we assume that the computer always moves last, if we assume that the computer can always move last, it's got that little advantage there because of, one, it's a robot player, so it's not really smart. Two, it simplifies the interactions so that when that interaction occurs, you can have it so that the client can actually then just say, okay, check to see are all the ships, hopefully just one, of all the ships moved for the player. And if the answer is yes, move your ship. Now, obviously that can be a problem. Because in theory, what can happen is that the player moves his ship and then he goes to see what the computer player is about to do, and then after he sees the computer player, then he goes back and goes, oh, I'll undo. And then the computer player has to undo his move and go forward from there. So it can be done. It's just the question is, how much do you want the integrity of the client? Because if you want true integrity, at that point, what you need to do is actually have a separate button. Oh, not a separate button. Yeah. No, what we'd have to have is that, just like before, I talked about the segments, and that is that if you click next segment, the computer can then react to the previous segment that you just said. You, by clicking the segment button, you say, I'm done. Well, you still have the issue of going backwards in segments. Like, oh, that's what it's going to do. But of course, undoing things when it comes to a computer player gets really problematic. But, you know, first time through, we'd say, okay, we don't support it. We don't support the whole idea of going backwards. You say, oh, well, you know, I made a mistake. I didn't mean, I wanted to, you know, the whole idea of what we currently have for SFB, which is we have next impulse. We also have the previous impulse, because in theory, you would never, ever, ever go back to the previous impulse. But the problem is all players are human, which means that humans make a mistake. Humans want to go back and fix their mistakes. And that's why you have to allow for the whole idea of going to the previous impulse. So then you can undo your moves. You can, or, you know, you say, oh, well, you went too fast for me. Fine. We can go back and so forth. But in theory, you should never, ever, ever, ever go back at impulse. You always should be going forward. And actually, that was one of the things that comes to mind when it comes to that one person who suggests basically an automated system which made the movement automated. Meaning that, as I pointed out, every 15, 30 seconds, whatever, that it would move. If you did not tell it that you want to turn or sidestep or whatever, it would then, okay, you're going straight. And then you keep going. And I don't see that as realistic at all. I understand the idea about that being that you can actually automate the process. And more importantly, it's like speed SFB. It really improves might be considered the playability of SFB because of it keeps the game moving. Which overall is not a bad thing. As pointed out many weeks ago, and that is that when you record a SFB, the game, it can, and trying to play that back, it can be really boring. Because of a game can take up to 6 hours. Well, in the case of an automated movement, that the whole idea would be to speed that game up. Now, the problem is it gets to a point where it is a video game or a real-time strategy game where things are always moving. And you're no longer playing a turn-based game. You're playing a real-time strategy game. Different, totally different way of playing things. SFB is a turn-based strategy game. Now, as I pointed out, one of those things that I still love to this day, and the thing is, implementing the client would be pretty tough because I've thought about this before just because of I wanted to implement doing play by email within the client. So you can actually place down your orders and then you can then take the orders, you can submit it to the server, and then it would then resolve the orders for you and you wouldn't need to have a moderator. Heck, I still have some old code which was the whole idea is that it was a play by email server. And then you would submit it, the play by email server, you submit your orders in a certain format, you know, and you could actually play SFB using that play by email server. I never did implement it because of, you know, other things came up. But anyhow, I think that adding a robot player to the client, I think it would be a great boon for people. Because I think it definitely it would help in the case that we currently have. Because that's one thing I've talked about before when it comes to Starfleet Warlord. I'm going to wrap that in. And that is the whole idea of needing an automated system, an automated game that you can play to keep you interested in playing the game while you're, in this case, the Starfleet Warlord, while you're waiting for the next game to start, because there's only so many games I can run. Now, as I was talking to, I forget which player I was talking to. I think I might have been talking to Rich Hartley. Actually, I'm positive I was talking to Rich Hartley. And that is the whole idea when it comes to Starfleet Warlord is that, at some point, I would want to run a game where the requirement of the game itself is that you send me electronic turns. If you send me electronic turns, then I can play it. Actually, that's one thing I might do that in the next couple months, is because of if I can have everyone have electronic turns, everyone's use the aid to submit their turns, then I can automate it. If I can automate it, I mean completely automate it. So the only thing I'm doing is grabbing out the email, saving it onto my hard drive, my computer, because I already have some automation already set up so that it takes processes the game file so it cleans it up if there's some problems, and then it then puts it into a certain folder. I got automation that does that. And actually I'm done with a little bit of programming. The cleanup portion is a little bit of a script that I created, which Wednesdays, I really have to really look at that script because I haven't looked at it for ages. You know, it's a good idea to actually know what the pieces are doing. But anyway, if I can then have it so that at some point, I just download it and then I hit the big red button. It goes, run, 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 bing. Done, you know, and then it automatically will send out the orders and it's done. You know, something that can be automated. The automated process can take me right maybe 15 minutes to run. That would be great. Now, as I said, the critical portion here would be that people would have to be able to submit electronic orders. Now, getting back to Starfleet Battles and FedCom and robot players, that is what is needed to keep people involved and want to stick around for SFB. That's because in the case, as was pointed out by definitely the survey, but more importantly to other people, where you know they've come in and there's no one to play. And if we have an automated robot, a robot player, even a stupid player, like the cadet player, or actually the FedCom player is a little more complicated. I haven't looked at all the rules. What I probably would, I'd probably take this robot player that's for the cadet training manual and implement that first so that it integrates with FedCom and then start looking at the rules that were for the robot player, which is 4 pages rules, which would take me probably a month to implement or see how I might be able to implement it in a you know, an ongoing basis, you know, gets, have it get smarter over time. But the whole idea there is that it would allow players to stay involved in SFB Online or FedCom Online, whatever they want to play. You know, SFB is a little more complicated. If they say, okay, I want to play against, you know, I want to play against a robot player. Okay. I would say that to indicate that somehow. But anyway, that's here and there, you know, it's, I'm not going to say it's simple enough to do. It's, I'm not sure how it would be done, but I can't imagine it being too difficult. Even if it requires something as you have to go into a special room. That is, or, you know, a special room. Because I can imagine people actually want to watch you play. Or if you want to go into single player mode. And you don't want, you know, play with people, but still it has to be a special room, which is a robot room. You know that you're going to be playing against a robot opponent. Now, the question always would be, for Cadet, it's simple. Because it's not going to do an energy allocation. FedCom, do we want it to actually abide by the rules and use the energy allocation? We probably do want it to abide by the rules. So that at least it's close enough to a real opponent that it's that you can continue on and you'll be good. SFB again. You know, and as I think I've mentioned in the past about this, which is if I was to do a robot player for SFB or FedCom, those players, that robot player would probably be limited to certain ships because of those ships can be easily be automated. For example, the whole idea of like a Klingon or a Wynn or a Zinni, one of those ships where you might have, there you can have drones, you have basic seeking weapons. You can, but more importantly, you have single turn arming weapons so that you can decide whether to fire, you know, to fire them or not. You know, and you might always have them so that, you know, simple little things like, oh, if he's within range 15 and he's facing me, overload disruptors. Something simple. So that, because you think, you feel like he's going to get into range 8, but when if he gets to a certain, you know, gets to range 8 and he turns away, then fire. You know, gets within range 7 and he turns away from you, or he fires first, then fire. Of course, this comes into a really interesting when it comes to SFB. SFB, this is one of those times it might be a Me Too firing because the robot player is going to react on what you do. After that, I might have to actually double check on the computer-based rules when it comes to the I forgot the rule is in SFB, which is the whole idea is that the whole ship is run by a computer is the whole idea. It's supposed to have special abilities that normally aren't available. And I think the Drex have that available, but it might be limited or something like that. I'd have to double check. But anyway, given that, I think, so the whole idea of doing a robot player, I think it's a great idea. I think it's definitely something to be implemented. The question is, where does it fall in line when it comes to priorities? At the moment, I'm thinking of waiting on the robot player. Though, at the same time, the more I talk about it to you guys, the more I want to say, you know, at least for a robot player for the cadet, and maybe work on improving the cadet version of the client. That might be a good idea. I have to double check. I can see if I can first fix that one UI issue, which I showed you before, you know, for those people who are actually watching the video feed. Otherwise, you know, for the people who are not, basically there was an issue where if you change between the different scenarios in the cadet room, it would never update the screen. It wouldn't update what you're looking at, because it might be showing, if you say first scenario one, it shows you, okay, the ships and so forth for scenario one. If you switch to scenario four, it still shows you everything for scenario one until you resize the window, then, oh, pop, it goes into scenario four. Not sure what that is about. In theory, you should be able to do an invalidate, and that should then be happy. But no, I think I'm doing that and it's still not being happy. Anyway, I am Paul Fran. With that, I'm going to wrap this evening up. Hopefully, we'll be talking with Barry next week, and we'll come up with a different topic instead of talking about the client and improving that and what people are expecting. Lord knows, that's one thing I want to just note before I sign off here, which is I plan on creating... I'm starting on working on a beta program. The beta program is mainly designed for people who are already players of SAP Online. People that have experience with the client, people that I don't want to lose. Let's be honest here. Because currently I can, if I don't get a single new customer, I can keep it running with the players that currently are there. As long as they keep playing, they keep paying, I can run. I can continue running SAP Online. When those guys disappear, all it draws up. So that the reason why I want a beta program that includes them is that I want their input so that some of these changes that what people would consider modern might take the players that I need around off. So I lose them and I have to shut down SAP Online because I've tried to improve it to be modern, but the people who wanted it to be modern aren't coming back. Or they say, well, it's still not what we want. It's like, well, I did what you asked me to do. And if you're not paying for it then, well, you know, I just wasted maybe 6 months developing, you know, trying to improve it. So in that 6 months versus, you know, someone will say, oh, you need to basically hire a, you know, rewrite the whole thing and with a new UX UI developer. It's like, well, one, that's not happening. And the reason why it's not happening is because I can't afford one. It would cost me, I'd have to pay them what I'm currently getting for my salary at my current job. I can't afford that. I can't afford to pay someone hundreds of thousands of dollars to develop a product that, you know, that's going to be nice and pretty. And of course, then we have the whole limitations on the graphics because they might want to use their own Star Trek-like graphics, but they can't. You can't use it. It must come directly from ADB because the fun part, I could hire that developer as a contractor, but that's about it. In theory, I work for ADB. In theory, I am a contractor to ADB. That's when it comes to the eyes of the licensing agreement, that's the way I am. I am a contractor. That's what it is. Even though I own SAP Online, I'm still a contractor to ADB. It keeps us going. But anyway, and with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.